afternoon. As Mayor mentioned, we'd like to call the September 23rd meeting of the Rogers Water Works and Sewer Commission to order. The first item we have on our agenda is to review the minutes from our August the 19th, 2024 Water and Sewer Commission meeting. We have those that came out in the packet, so we'll start there. I would entertain a motion if you've had an opportunity to review those.
I will make a motion to approve minutes.
Second.
A motion by Travis, second by Kathy. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion to approve, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries to approve the minutes from the August the 19th meeting. The next area we'll go into reports. We'll start with the financial report.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you.
All right, here we go. This is our financial report for the month of August. We'll start with billed revenue and consumption. As you know, it's been kind of a dry month or two, and we see that reflected here. Looking at the water fund, we've got billed revenue up 10.2% compared to August of 2023, with consumption for the same time period up 5.5%. In the sewer fund, we're looking at billed revenue up 7.9% compared to consumption up 7%. For actuals versus budget, we are 2 months of the way through the fiscal year now, so using that kind of as our benchmark, August is about 16.7% of the way through the year. And relative to that, we show water revenues of 19.9%. I'll find maybe a little better way to kind of break this out next month, but I think it'd be kind of useful to share with you guys how that breaks out between the billed consumption and then the other sources of revenue. So just mentioning those, billed consumption is about 21%, and then for other revenue sources, they're about 16%. Expenses on the water side are 15.7%, so tracking a little bit under budget there. And then our capital outlays are about 6% of budget. For the sewer fund, overall revenues are tracking under that benchmark at 14.7%. If you look just at the consumption, though, it's at 17%. So it's about where you would expect it. It's the other revenue sources for sewer that are tracking a little bit under at about 8% so far. Expenses, though, are also tracking under budget at 11.4%, and our sewer outlays to date are about 3.7% of our projection for FY25. For year-to-date income or loss, we'll take a look at the next page here and just show you, starting with water at the top. Really similar to what we've seen the past couple of fiscal years, income of $734,000. In the month of August, between July and August, totaling up to $1.3 million, really neck and neck with how we started last year. On our way to our budgeted income of $4.8 million. And then down here for sewer, we had sewer income in August of $629,000. Add that up with July, and we're at $1.2 million for the fiscal year, tracking a little bit over last year, a clip of about 12%. And again, we're headed towards that almost $8 million budgeted income for sewer. So kind of predictable starts here for water and sewer. Access and impact fee revenue, we picked up a little bit in August from our slow start in July. $133,000 collected this month. So that brings our year-to-date totals to 5% of last year's total of $3.1 million. And 7% of our FY25 budget, which, if I recall, was around $2 million. Do you have a question?
No, I was just looking at year over year on those
pretty big dip in what we had collected in the same period, 2 months last year versus this year, and I just didn't know how.
This is not 2 months. These are cumulative totals for the prior fiscal years. So this 3.1 that you see for FY24, I mean that's for the year.
And I was looking. I was looking at the actual statement, and it was quite a bit significantly different. And this activity period last year versus this year, it was quite a bit different. And it's kind of hard to budget those because you're really not sure when those projects. I think we've asked Brian in the past. You're not sure when those projects are going to hit, but it did impact those numbers.
We were tracking under budget for virtually all of last, or through 9 months, I think, of last fiscal year. It was only in the last quarter where we not only met but exceeded our budgeted total for those last fiscal year. So it is hard to predict.
I was going to say it was kind of hard just looking at the same period year over year, and it was a different swing. So.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why we give you not the like we do up here. We don't necessarily compare it to the prior period because it can be so volatile. Instead, we sort of give you this bigger picture view of the cumulative totals and kind of how we're tracking towards those.
That's good. Thank you, Jared.
Our last items here, we just note we've got total unrestricted and restricted funds of $52.1 million compared to $49.6 million this same period last year. And then our 12-month rolling average for Lock Water sitting at 7.2%. I'll also just mention that we've had the auditors in the office for a few days, a couple of weeks ago. We've given them a bunch of documentation, and I think they're pretty close. I think they're pretty close to wrapping up and having us something we can work with. And so just wanted to mention that we're trucking along there and getting close to audited numbers for FY24. Any other questions?
No. Any other questions?
Nope.
All right.
Thank you.
Before we move to the next item, just for the sake of the minutes, I did vote to approve those because it was just the three of us, so that's a lot of information, but I did vote in favor of those, so we'll have the three votes. So, Jared, thank you for the financial report. Thank you. Robert, does that take care of us? Okay. The next item, Brian, for engineering reports. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Start out with a development plan review. We really didn't see anything new and earth-shattering this month. A lot of the same, a lot of townhomes, a lot of commercial development. We're seeing a lot of commercial permits trickle in from the storm damage repairs and things like that. You see a kind of high concentration there along that Walnut Street corridor. And we're kind of in this transition period going to the new form-based code. And so we're going to start to see those large-scale developments disappear, and they'll be replaced by these site development plans and public improvement plans, in which we've got three site development plans in there now, and we'll probably see more of those in the future. And that's just, it's the same kind of stuff. It's just different terminology. It's the way it's coming through planning. Another thing that's new that we are reviewing now is sign permits. We haven't historically been provided the opportunity to review new sign permits, but they do occupy the same space generally as where our utilities are in the frontage along the road. Sometimes they're in the utility easements, and so we just want to make sure that those signs aren't being placed where it's going to cause a problem for us now or in the future. And so this last month, this would be in August, we reviewed 156 sets of plans and permits. So,
did the sign thing come out of the rewrite of 14, or how did that occur?
I think this is more of a function of us being involved in the City Works process and seeing and having that visibility into their system and everything they're doing. Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, we see sign permits, and I think we probably called over there and said, hey, can we take a look at those? We've had some issues with signs, so we're just getting involved. And most of those are, okay, well, you know, I think three-quarters of the sign permits are, you know, go on the building, so we just kind of open it and say, okay, that's fine, and close it, so... But, you know, we're looking for the monument sign that might be built over the water or sewer line or something.
When you think about that Walnut project, if it ever moves forward up from Walnut, really from 8th all the way to Dixieland, there's a lot of, you know, monument signs out there that are going to be dealt with.
Yeah, I think a lot of the signs that are aerial are going to go to monument with the new code, so we'll have to police those a little bit.
Thank you. Extra work, but a lot of it.
Go through the list of the plan reviews here. But yeah, there's quite a few sign permits to go through. Project status, not a whole lot of changes here. We did solicit bids for that 5th and Walnut intersection. We did not receive any response from those bids. And so Aaron's tracking down some more construction companies to try to get a bid for that project. It's just a compact, complex, nasty little project.
That was the second. Have we bid that two times?
We actually solicited for public bid, got no response. We solicited three bidders after that, and I think one of them has turned around and told us they're going to try to get us some numbers on that. Crossland Heavy is looking at it, which they're also working on Poplar Street, but okay. And I think we might be looking at a couple more and try to get some pricing from them. We did receive the final numbers back on the solids handling facility phase two. They Crossland Heavy, our construction manager, bid out all the work packages. I've got the results from that on the next page. I'll show to you. And I moved Uptown and Oak Street overpass to complete. I think they're still finishing up some final touches on the landscaping and street side on that, but utilities are done on that one, so we're considering that project complete. So on solids handling phase two, after receiving the bids on the work packages, the construction cost ended up being, this is with the dryer and everything inclusive, $33.1 million, and that's down from the $36.3 million GNP that was anticipated. And a lot of this is just because, at the 50% plan stage, there's a lot of contingencies that are built in there for unknowns and to finish out the plans, so that those contingencies have gone down, and also we've been granted tax exempt status, and so there's a lot of equipment taxes that were lower. But overall, the bids came in a little bit lower than we expected, so we're very pleased with those results and what Crossland Heavy has provided us on that. And so the schedule moving forward, we'll be mobilizing and on site next month. October 24th, I think, is the date that they'll start work. And it'll take about 19 months to complete. And we're looking at 20th of April, 2026, as a completion date tentatively. So. Another thing we started looking at again, if you'll recall, a few years ago, we were looking at demoing some of these old sheds out back and some of these old work areas and expanding our field operations facility. And, you know, then of course COVID hit, construction prices went through the roof, and we decided to rearrange some offices and this weight on any major construction. And now that everything's kind of stabilized and some prices have actually come down, metal buildings, for example, we're going to take another look at this. And field ops, they really are bursting at the seams with their staff and equipment out back there. And so, you know, we're taking a holistic approach again and looking at, you know, the field operation, the needs of the office, IT, engineering, and you know, we're really trying to look, you know 15, 20 years ahead, you know, what are our staffing levels going to look like, and that kind of brings into question, you know, is this site here in downtown going to meet our needs with what space we have? And so we're evaluating some alternate sites, and I think we'll be discussing those options with the city as well, who also needs to expand some of their departments. So, you know, we want to work with the city on whichever direction we go. But we'll develop some of those concept plans based on those growth scenarios, and as we get a little bit closer to something that we want to pursue, we'll let you know our progress. Other updates, of course, we've got to talk about Pinnacle. So we're the actual sewer construction. I think we're almost there. We've got about one section of sewer line along Champions to the tie-in point. I would say we should be there in the next couple of weeks, having all the sewer line in, and then it'll just be completing the restoration along Champions, and then in Pinnacle. The contractor did not leave the site. They continued to perform. They brought in an alternate landscape contractor. As we got closer to LPGA and got in those discussions with a country club, it was decided that, you know, with all the traffic coming through there, it was a little bit too close to the tournament to start laying new sod, or it was going to get rutted up, and with the two-way traffic on the cart paths, and we were just going to have to lay it again. So these pictures were taken last week. Over the weekend, they put some mulch down in those areas along the cart path, just to kind of dress it up, and we're going to come back and finish the sod work after the tournament starting next week. And then, if you recall, a couple of months ago, we showed you this line that's going under I-49 around Blossom Way Creek, near the trails at Blossom Way Apartments over there. And it was tuberculated and just really in bad shape. And so we brought the contractor in, and this is after the pipe reaming. They kind of knocked all that tuberculation off, and then we had that UV cured liner going through that pipe. And so that's the finished product.
So that was done.
That was completed last week. And we've got a similar line that we'll be doing here in a couple of weeks. That's over there crossing. Near Outback Steakhouse and in that area, that it looks about like this, if not a little bit worse, but it's a 12-inch line. So we'll be doing the same process on that line. And that's something the field operations has been coordinating with our contractor with. And yeah, it turned out, we're really happy with the way that turned out. So.
Good.
All right, that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
That's Brian.
Well, here we are for another month. Our phosphorus did come up a little bit. If you recall, whenever we had our maintenance on the dryer, and I was talking about, hey, we got a little bit behind on our solids because it took a little longer. What you're seeing is a result of that. We had almost twice as much phosphorus go out on an average day. And our 7-day average during that time period was 0.5. So that's our worst week.
recall for that. Our limit is actually two here for the 30-day. Our limit is one. So we're still well within our limits, but you can see the impacts of our solids not being where they need to be whenever you compare it to the remainder of the year. Other than that, everything else looks fairly normal. Our fog program, Amber continues to knock it out of the park. She's been working quite a bit. She probably doesn't say anything in here on it, but there's she's been working some on the food trucks. It's a continually squishy and moving target that, you know, we make an effort and we figure out what doesn't work and we go back and make another effort. But she spent quite a bit of time trying to work on that this last month, in addition to what she's documented here. Tyson Chicken Quick, Tyson's of Rogers, and Southeast Poultry. They had a few issues that they run across, but they were, you know, fine to work with, and they're gonna work on that. Some inexperience in their pre-treatment process, and some aging and outsized equipment that they're also working on is kind of the summary of what we're looking at there. The dryer gearbox, or the dryer maintenance, was completed. It did take a week instead of planned 3 days. One of the gearboxes there was grounded, was just bonded to one of our main rotor shafts just from corrosion over the years. Unfortunately, after 10 days of running, it did develop a leak in one of the rotary joints. And then we lost 2 days of operations for changing out that rebuilt unit. Those rotary joints take a long time to get, and they're really expensive. In the past, we've been able to send them out and have them rebuilt at least 3 times, and it's been being $16,000-$17,000 to have them rebuilt. So we have 2 of them on the machine. They're both the same, so we kept 1 shelf spare. That incident was our shelf spare. After we ran that thing for a couple of days and after I'd already turned this in, we developed another leak in the other one. And it's going to be mid-November before we can get a new one. So that's what the request for today is for, is to get one up for the second one that is now leaking, because we've used our shelf spare on this incident. So that's what that's about, just to kind of tie the two requests together. But we'll get to that one later. We had our most recently hired maintenance technician move out of the area. We moved one of our operations tech over to the maintenance team, and now we're searching for a new operations tech. Dan has given us some really good candidates that we're sifting through, so excited about that. Overall, you can see it was a really dry month and really not a lot of I&I at all, but there was only 3 inches of rain, which is typical for August maybe, but at any rate, that was good news. So any questions for us out of the plant?
Questions?
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you. The next item, no old business, so we're going to move to new business. The first item under new business is an engineering proposal, RDOT Highway 112 utility relocations.
Yes, so as you're aware, the Arkansas DOT is planning to widen the Highway 112 corridor from Bentonville all the way down to the 412 bypass, and part of one of those phases goes north south there in the vicinity of Pleasant Grove Road, and that's going to include a roundabout intersection where they currently have a stoplight, and all through that corridor is going to be, they're going from a 2-lane highway to a boulevard acquiring right of way. A lot of that recent development we've had out there, we've installed water lines just outside of RDOT's right-of-way, since they will be taking that taking those easements, we're going to have to move those water lines back out of the easement, most of which should be eligible for reimbursement by the State Highway Department. And so what I have here is there's two agreements that I'm asking you for your approval on. The first is the RDOT agreement, the professional engineers agreement, and this is basically agreement saying that, yes, we approve of Kraft and Toll to do this work at this cost, and that'll be, and that this was eligible for reimbursement. We don't know exactly what that rate is until we get the plans done and see the percentage of the utilities that are inside and outside of the right-of-way. But this is RDOT's commitment to reimburse us for those expenses. The next agreement I have is a proposal from Kraft and Toll at a total hourly fees not to exceed $125,000 to do this design work for these relocations. We're requesting authorization to enter into this agreement and to allow us to negotiate the final form and content.
RDOT has already approved
Yes.
these dollar amounts?
Yes.
I'd make a motion to approve.
A second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve and a second, and that is the agreement with the Arkansas Department of Transportation for the acquisition of preliminary engineering services, and also to enter into an agreement with Captain Cole and Associates for the design for the relocation with the proposed highway corridor at hourly rates, since it's not to exceed $125,000. That also allows, with that motion second, the staff to negotiate final content. And with that motion and a second, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries to approve both of those agreements.
Okay. Thank you.
Brian, thank you. Okay, the next item we have is a service agreement for water storage tanks.
Yes, so this is a long-term agreement that we were presented to by KLM. KLM Engineering is they specialize in inspection and design of water storage tanks. We've worked with them this past several years, and we've been extremely happy with the inspection work they've done. They did the design work and the specifications on our recoding of the 11th Street tank. And what they proposed here is to put these inspections on a schedule. And so, they've gone through all of our previous inspections and work done on these tanks. And they've kind of outlined, year over year, what do we need to do, what inspections are necessary to be compliant with AWWA recommendations and standards. And so this is a 12-year agreement that kind of schedules out all these inspections and basically puts this program on autopilot. It's important to note that this agreement requires them to submit annual qualifications every year, and so if anything ever changes, this can be canceled. If the funding is not available, we're not obligated to do the next inspection. And so we recommend approval of this service agreement, and also authorization to negotiate the final form and content of the agreement. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I'll make a motion to for approval of the service agreement with KLM Engineering Inspection of Water Storage Tanks in accordance with the schedule provided. Herein, staff requests authorization and that the staff can negotiate the final form and content of this agreement.
Motion.
Second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Anything else on that one?
I think that's all.
Agreed.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. All right, the next item is item number 3 with an engineering proposal.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
So we were, a few months ago, came to you guys with a request for qualifications to get help basically redeploying our SCADA system that's both here at the office and at the plant. Garver then was rewarded that with that agreement, and they came to us with this proposal that we're seeking approval of, and this is basically scopes out that first phase. So this will be the design, the conceptual piece of it. A lot of it will be evaluating our current setup and just kind of designing how we, you know, our plan of attack from there. So we do recommend approval of this with authorization to negotiate the final form and content of the agreement. And I'll take any questions if you have them.
Do we have any idea when will we be doing this again? Just out of curiosity.
It'll probably be on the next sort of phase, you know, once we kind of get through this phase of work and that next one. But when, I would say, I don't know, early next year, maybe.
Any other questions? We have a recommendation before us.
I will make a motion to approve.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second to approve the agreement with Garver Engineers for the evaluation and conception design and SCADA upgrades for the water sewer operations at an hourly fee not to exceed $157,800. And staff also request the authorization to negotiate final contract agreement. With that, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve the Garver agreement.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Thank you. Okay. The next item we have is item number 4, and that is a resolution 24-27 authorizing the purchase of a certain replacement part for the sludge dryer at the Rogers Pollution Control. I already hear about the leak.
Yes. So yes, we put our shelf spare back on, ran for 2 days, and come back in, and it was leaking pretty bad to the point we would typically replace it. We scrambled around trying to find, like, can we rebuild it locally? Can we do some repairs locally? Because we knew historically how long the lead time was, and it was leaking to a point we couldn't operate with it, operating the way it was. Leaking the way that it was. We decided that everything being the same, we weren't going to cost ourselves any time if we shut it off, let it cool down over a weekend, and then whenever everything contracted, hit our pumps and see if we couldn't push fresh oil through that joint and maybe flush whatever was causing it to leak, and then fire it back up, let everything expand and see if it sealed. Well, it did. We're like, bought us a little time. And so we went ahead and talked to Caden about rebuilding one of our existing joints. Well, they come back and they said, well, we can rebuild it, but our prices on everything have went up. It's $37,000 for the rebuild that you've been getting for 20. And I'm like, that means I've still got to go to commission, go through all that. And I'm like, that doesn't really save us any time. And so they said, but a new one's only $42,000. So $5,000 difference on that part. I'm like, and they can only rebuild them 3 times anyway, and this would have been the 3rd time on that joint. And I said, well, clearly we need to go in and buy a new one, but I've got to, you know, to buy a new part. Now I've got to go in and ask for a sole source permission and to spend over $35,000. So that's what this is for. The amount is $46,032.71
plus shipping and taxes. And it should be here mid-November. Just to give me a little warm and fuzzy, it started leaking again this morning, so we're going to try our little trick again this week. So we're basically limping it at this point and hoping to make it until this part arrives. So that's where we're at.
Well, we don't have much of a choice here, Todd.
Short of a redesign of the of the oiling system of the dryer, we're pretty well stuck getting exactly this joint back in there.
Well, all I'm going to say, as tough as this commission is, and I've only been here for a little while, you can come. You've done everything it sounds like you possibly can do to get the best and out of what we've got.
Right. It
probably applies to everybody that I've seen. So you've done, I applaud what you've done.
Right.
Turn it off, turn it back on. Water, not forgiving. If it leaks, it's going to leak.
It's going to leak.
It's going to leak. We've all, if we've
yes, it's there's.
Todd, you've done a good job. So don't hesitate. And they're tough on this end. I'll try to be the easy guy.
I hear you. You guys. So. No, you guys are awesome to work with. And I will say this for my guys. After working for a week trying to do some preventative maintenance, and then having to come back in and replace one, trying to get that thing done before we get into the part of the winter where we struggle to keep up anyway. My guys really did a good job.
So once you replace this, I know you've had them on the shelf. And as far as will you then have to just discard one of them? Because it sounds like it's been done. Everything you can do.
Well,
so will you still have something on the shelf in case you have another issue?
This is only for one of them. We'll have to see. I haven't explored my options as far as I would like to ask her to. This one's based on time. We're in a time crunch. I'm trying to get it. I'm hoping that maybe I can piece together a rebuild kit on our own, because that's what Caden Johnson does. They go out to different manufacturers and grab springs and seal faces and that kind of stuff, and then they sell it to us as a package.
Okay.
And then, but I'm hoping to maybe find some of that we can source ourselves and maybe have a local machine shop do some work. So, the reason being is because this other shelf spare may get mothballed whenever the new sludge dryer is online. We're just talking about a couple of years. These joints typically last for 4 to 5. So I hate to spend a ton of money on something we're just going to throw away.
Like you're thinking.
I think you've got.
But I think we
have to.
No, without a doubt.
On this one, we have to. On the second one, I don't know. We'll evaluate our options and see what we can come up with.
Well, we have resolution 2427 before us, and I think we've all come to the conclusion something needs to be done. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion that we pass resolution number 24-27, authorizing the purchase of a certain replacement part for the sludge dryer at the Rogers Pollution Control Facility, authorizing expenditure of funds for the purchase, waiving competitive bidding, and for other purposes.
Motion.
Second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Todd, thank you.
Great. Thank you, guys.
I'd like to introduce Nick Landy's recent name. And as you know, you guys have heard us talk a lot about don't worry about all that money, we're just going to spend it fast. We're real intimate with it, but you are not. So Nick's come up with to present this capacity improvements project. We saved it for last, so I ask any kind of questions at any time you want. I want this to be a real good open discussion, but it's not terribly long. You did a great job. I thought it was about 100 slides. It's 20. So without further ado, I'll introduce you. I have to go through this, but please ask any questions you have along the time.
Brent, thank you. Nick, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad that you're here. Excellent. Your presentation.
Excellent. Yeah, this stuff really excites me. It's been fun working with your team, and so I'm glad they told me to keep it short, because I could go on for a long time. If I do start getting a little long-winded, throw something at me. All right, so this project I guess what we'll cover is the project objective, I guess how we set up the design basis, which is important, won't touch too much on it, but kind of let you know a few things about that. Go through the fun part, which is the proposed improvements. We have some real neat models that we developed, and so it's three-dimensional, not so much two-dimensional, and then go over the cost at the end. So the project objective is essentially to make sure that Rogers has enough capacity, wastewater treatment capacity, out 20 years down the road. And so we developed a master plan in 2000, starting in 2020, and finalized it a couple years ago. Or I guess we finalized it last year. And this is a projection chart from that. The existing treatment capacity for the facility is the red line, so it's 14 million gallons per day. That's what the facility has the capacity right now to do. There's different ways to look about, like, when do you need to start building the next thing? When do you need to get ready for that? There's different rules of thumb for that, but one of them is that once you hit 90% of the capacity of your facility, you need to start building and getting ready for the next thing. And so that occurs, I guess, let me scroll down a little bit. Here, that occurs around 2030, and when you need to have construction started or the facility online. And so we'll go through a little bit on the timeline and a little bit to kind of piece that together. But that's one of the main motivations, you know, need capacity for the future. And this is the design basis. There's different things we base the plan on. One is called the average amount that you're going to see in a year. And that's typically what we design the process capacity for. This is a biological wastewater treatment facility, so we basically make sure we have enough space for bacteria to live. We need enough housing units for the bacteria. The other thing is called peak hourly flow, and that's the hydraulics. That's how much liquid we're going to push through it. Those two are a little bit different. The hydraulics is a much higher number, so that's the second row here. Currently, the facility has about 36 MGD, million gallons per day, of that hydraulic capacity. Well, off in the future, 20 years or so down the road, you need to about double that, a little more than double it. So that's a critical value. That's the main thing that's changing in a big way. And that's because of the INI, inflow and infiltration that the system it sees. The team, the Rogers team, has done a great job of trying to reduce that number. During the master plan, that number wasn't 72.2. It was a number much higher. And so we've continued to work with the team to make sure that that's the right number, because it controls a lot of the cost. And so they keep doing improvements out in the collection system to reduce that number, and make us feel comfortable with the 72.2 number that we have here. But the work that they've done has saved a lot of money by taking care of the collection system before, making sure the water doesn't get in the pipes before it gets to the plant. So that Todd and his team, they don't have to see this big surge. They'll see a surge, but not as big. All right, so this is kind of a schematic, a quick diagram of what's existing versus what's going to be proposed in the future. So the treatment plan is broken up into, we'll call it three different categories. There's preliminary treatment, there's secondary treatment, and there's tertiary treatment. We'll go to a site view of the plant in a little bit, and you'll see that the majority of it, even though it looks tiny on here, the majority of the facility is the secondary treatment component. It's the heart of the facility. It's basically why everything's built. It's what's going to, for the most part, protect the creek and the environment. The preliminary treatment makes sure to protect the secondary treatment, and then the tertiary treatment, it just kind of polishes things off. It removes a little bit more solids, and it removes the bacteria. It disinfects. So the preliminary treatment, as it is, just isn't big enough. It needs to be expanded. It's handling that big jump from 36 to 72.2 on the hydraulics. And it just needs to be bigger. And so the current facilities aren't expandable. There's also some, they're aging, and so there's some maintenance issues with the existing facilities. And so that's one of the things that will be improved upon. In the secondary treatment, the vast majority of it's okay, but there is a little bit of a hydraulic bottleneck. I'll touch on that briefly, but in terms of the scheme of the secondary treatment, there's not a lot. Secondary treatment is the housing units for the bacteria, basically. The tertiary treatment, there's quite a bit going on there. These traveling bridge filters, they've been a maintenance nightmare since they've been installed, and their performance has really deteriorated over time. The chlorine contact basins, there's a harmful chemical chlorine that's being used with that, it's chlorine gas. And so, great chemical, it works really effective, it's fairly inexpensive, but if there's an issue, if there's a leak, it's catastrophic. It's not a good deal at all. It's extremely dangerous if there's a leak. And so the facilities, the operators have done a great job with it, but we want to make it, there's other alternatives that are safer. And then the last thing is a super saturated oxygen addition. So for quite a while now, Todd and his team have been pumping as much oxygen into the water. They've been going past the point that physics allows you to put oxygen in the water in order to meet permit limits. That doesn't make any sense, right? Why would that be happening? Well, the regulator said you have to do this, and so Todd and his team have found a way to make it happen. They reached out to the regulators and said, hey guys, we got to review this again. This doesn't make sense. And so they coordinated with the regulators, and for once, the regulators said, okay, you're right, which is a great thing to hear. And in the draft permit, at least, they relaxed the limits down to what they should be. And so this super saturated oxygen, which takes a lot of energy, they're going to be able to walk away from that once this permit gets finalized. Who knows when that's going to be, but that there's a daylight in the future. So the second row here shows what's going to be improved, and I'm you know, this is just a diagram showing you what's there, but yeah, the preliminary treatment and the tertiary treatment, that's where the majority of the improvements are happening. I'm going to go through a bunch of models that show you nice visuals of what that looks like. Okay, and this is a site layout. Sorry, it looks a little pastel-y or washed out. It looks like my kid painted it, but hopefully it looks a little better on your screen.
It was really nice when Nick sent it to me.
That's all right. What I wanted to show in this particular one is just where the improvements are happening. The north side of this picture is where all the improvements are happening. There's a nice clean patch of land, which is nice for contractors, nice for constructability. There's a place to construct all these improvements in a logical space. And then you can kind of see in red the units that are going to be decommissioned or potentially repurposed in the future. But the vast majority of the plant is intact. All right. So now to the model. So one of the fun things that we were able to do in this, well, I guess I'll touch upon. I mentioned there's a hydraulic restriction, two-thirds of the bacteria housing, the secondary treatment, two-thirds of that, it's older, built in the 80s, and there's some hydraulic bottlenecks, just pipes that are too small. And so we worked with the team to come up with ways to relieve that bottleneck. And we have a pretty simple, in the scheme of things, simple, low-cost method in order to relieve that bottleneck, and so that the operators don't have to experience that hydraulic bottleneck. They can kind of unlock the capacity of two-thirds of their biological treatment process. And this kind of just shows what the concepts were for that. All right, now to the model. So I'll kind of walk you through the plant as a water droplet or wastewater droplets moving through the plant. The first is the coarse screening facility. So this is a new facility for the operators. This is a really neat thing in that it protects everything downstream of it. It removes a little bit of the solids, a little bit of the debris that would pose problems for the pumps once it gets to the pumps. So this is taking a little bit of that. It's like a continuous preventative maintenance program that's always going, it's always there, it's always reliable. And so this will improve everything downstream of it. It's going to be enclosed in order to capture all the odors that are coming from it, and also to protect during cold weather, whenever cold weather occurs. Then we move, the water then goes from that stream facility to pump station. We looked at different types of pump stations with the city and came up with this particular configuration. It's called a vertical turbine solid tank pump. The important things about it are that the maintainable parts, they're all above grade. They're not dropped down into the water. They're above grade where they're accessible and easy to get to. And so that's the compared to what they currently have, this is going to be a lot more maintainable. And so that's one of the more important parts of it. It's also a little bit more efficient and a little bit more tight and compact. So it's going to have a lower cost, and it's going to spend a little bit less on energy as well. So this is a real nice addition. The team has, this is kind of a new pump technology for them. So they've spoken with lots of different utilities around the area and make sure, you know, how's your experience with it, and make sure it's the right fit for them. All right, so as it goes through these pumps, they're going to lift it up pretty high into what we call the headworks. The headworks removes quite a bit more material in order to protect everything downstream of it. It goes through what we call fine screens, and then it goes through grit removal. So there's lots of access to it. It's going to be enclosed so that the odors are prevented from getting out. The aesthetic of it is going to be better than seeing a bunch of concrete screens and such. There are lots of input from the operators on this in order to make it more accessible, more maintainable. This is a rendering of it from the ground level. I guess a rendering in the fall. You can get to see some fall leaves there. And this is one from the top of it, looking off towards the old existing the current headworks facility, which is in the top right of that image. This is kind of looking inside of it. I guess there's going to be about five screens, so it's going to have lots of capacity. There is ability if in the future there is need for additional capacity, this facility can be expanded to the north. So there is a plan for that. But in general, everything is easy, accessible, maintainable, and that's the theme we'll continue to go with as we move into design. This is a look at the grit removal facilities. They kind of spin the grit around, and the grit settles down in the middle. So it's fairly easy to remove. All right, so another thing at this facility is the peak flow basin. So there is large hydraulic surges, and it's good to be able to have a big parking lot to put that water so that you can, whenever the rain event subsides and the water comes down, that you can take it out of that parking lot whenever you have a little bit more time and capacity and push it through the facility. And so we're expanding the peak flow basin facilities. There's currently quite a bit of peak flow basin capacity. This one's improving upon those existing ones in several ways, but it's making it where the basins can be cleaned out a lot more readily and easily. It's got a bunch of water cannons or water monitors that are mounted around it so it can be kind of flushed and cleaned down. This is a rendering of it, and off to the right and left you can see some of those water cannons. All right, so then the water then goes through the biological part of the plant, the heart of it. And so now we're jumping out on the other side of that. The bacteria have done their work. We've kind of left them in there in the biological basins. And now we're moving on to what's called tertiary filtration. So there's just a little bit of solids that are coming out of the biological process, and it's real nice to be able to remove those. The current method in which the solids are removed is it's a media filter. So there's anthracite and sand that the water flows through, and they kind of sieve out the material. This is going to be a little bit newer technology. It's established technology, but it's going to be new to the plant. And it's using pile cloth. If you've ever had a chamois, that's real similar to a chamois. It's got real tight pores on it to exclude lots of the material and make a real nice finished water quality. This is going to be covered in order to prevent algae from growing on it, and the maintenance on this is going to be significantly better than their current traveling bridge filters. This is a rendering of it from the top side, looking off into the sunset. I guess it's looking off at the old traveling bridge filters. All right, so now that we've removed the solids, we've polished it a little bit, then we go to UV disinfection. This is where we kill the bacteria. Right now it's being killed with chlorine gas, effective but dangerous chemical. UV disinfection is a lot safer and more effective in lots of ways, means to disinfect the wastewater. This particular type of UV disinfection that we're looking at is the state of the art. It's energy efficient as it can be, and also it's the most maintainable, I guess, UV systems have had a reputation of not being very easy to maintain. This particular system takes care of lots of those loads, and it's a very maintainable, very energy efficient system. And it's also enclosed for weather protection. All right, so the bottom line, the cost. This cost is a little bit more than the dryer building cost, but looking at current cost, it's a shade over $100,000 in current dollars. We escalate that typically off of the midpoint of construction, so it'd be around 2028. And so around that point is about $118 million. I guess those are the numbers. We're assuming that it's going to be a design bid build method, which is a traditional procurement method, but it can be also be the CMAR type method, which I think you've had lots of success with. You will see, just kind of alluding to one of the previous proposals, you'll see in here that there is a SCADA component associated with this. So there will be some SCADA improvements associated with this one as well. In terms of the schedule, the design phase will start somewhere in the fall of next year, is what we're thinking right now. And then construction will start around the fall of 2027 and finish around the end of the year in 2029 to be ready for 2030. All right, and that's it. So if there's any questions, love to hear it.
I guess, everybody's in favor of the moving to the UV. No. Chlorine gas is nasty stuff, but it's cheap and it's been around a long time.
Yeah, when all the development took place out there. And we've run into some things. Everything on this one is expandable by design because we don't know. When they built the last one, there were certain facilities there that were... Well, they'll never get out there. You know the story. But chlorine is fine if you're out in the field and away from populated areas. We're not there. And Nick will know more, but UV has been around for actually quite some time.
I'd give it 30 plus years where it's been pretty mainstream.
and moving to the cloth media from the traveling bridge, your chamois, are those just the operation maintenance of those things, frequent replacement? Is there a downside to it?
There's always a downside to everything, and I'm trying to think of what it is, but I'm
struggling. That's good. That's a good sign.
Of going that particular direction is.
The sand will typically last about 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those may be through, but it is easier and less expensive.
Another alternative that we did look at was utilizing our existing traveling bridge basin and retrofitting that with one of these cloth media systems. And that was kind of a basis of comparison to the disc system. And I think after we looked at the cost of the two, it just made more sense to build a whole new facility because the one was a retrofit, was a proprietary system, and the cost would have been very similar. This one was a little bit more efficient in the long term.
Hmm. We went to two facilities in southern Missouri that had the retrofit option, they love that retrofit option, those two facilities we went to. But the thing they would say at the end of it is, but if we could have those discs instead of this retrofit option, we would definitely go with the discs.
There's a lot of backlash.
One of the big savings, big differences between the older style that we have right now and this newer style is it's not returning as much water back to the plant. So you don't have to treat things twice, thrice, and round. Whenever it's backwashing the most is whenever you're getting hit with a big hydraulic load. Because it's hitting you whenever you need as much pumping capacity as you have. And it's the current system's kind of eating up the capacity when they need it the most.
Talk to me about how we pay for this and the timing of all that. Obviously, we're looking at missing about a month, and it looks like the timing of this hits about 2029, which looks like that's when we are 90%. Talk a little bit about how you pay for that. What kind of rate increases? Where are we?
It'd be a combination, but what we'll do, we can kind of really hone in on this, then we can enter that into our rate study, which has begun. So this is a great time for that.
Sure.
Put it in there. They'll come up with the debt service levels and all of our ratios and everything else, and that will determine what kind of a bond issue we have.
Potential rate.
This would be more of just a meeting. I doubt this would be an SRF. Unless there's some very attractive rates or some type of grant. We're always on the lookout for what's best for ratepayers. I'm assuming that it'll just be a bond.
Has there been any napkin math done on guesstimating percent increase on?
Not just yet. If we go with it and we put that in there now, I can get you some pretty quick.
I'm just curious that bottom line dollar amount, is that like $6,000 a customer, $5,000 a customer? I mean, it's...
Now, we have done some quick back and forth, and I hesitate to, it's not near as bad as you think. So, because we've got some money in the bank, we've got good rate structure in place, we've all talked about this, the other managers, and all of us as well. We just happen to be in the seat when this growth is happening, and we all need to take the same similar steps right now. This sets us up, you've heard me talk about it before, but our perimeter is set now. So we have something to design against, whereas some cities are still expanding.
And that was kind of my next thought or question as you look at the Chapter 14 rewrite, and I know that there's a lot of conversation about density and having density where density needs to go, and things are changing. And so looking at well, with what we're trying to design here to meet that need 20 years, taking in the rewrite of that and the density, you feel like, I mean, I was kind of looking into the crystal ball that it's changing because we've gone from what we thought would be single family and we spread out and we were continuing to grab land and grow. We've really, as you say, we've kind of pulled back. Looks like the land is set. Now it's just going to be to build it out.
Yeah, and it is completely dependent on density. We work with Northwest Arkansas Planning Commission and everyone else to try to do planning. Trying to do the very best we can, not go overboard, but allow for expansion, set it up for that, and move on. But that's really not as bad a number as we thought. You're excited.
Well, I just like the fact that it's, who knows, 20 years from now. But I think you're looking at it and planning, you know, the 90%. You're hitting that on 2029, you're hitting that 90%. And again, it's staying in front of it rather than what we hear the communities around us that have gotten behind. And it's the catch-up process that we don't want to be. Because you have all the penalties and things that I'm sure. So, do you need us to take any action tonight other than just to...
No, this is just informative. We've been, again, talking this, batting this around out there. What we can do now is we can look at phasing. And I don't... If some questions come up, our questions internally are, is there a way to potentially phase this? Would we want to phase it? Or would you want to mobilize twice and have two different contractors? Would you get a better deal if you did all at once? The timing is, I don't know that we'll phase anything. It's probably better just to do it at once. But we're still in those discussions. Once we figure that out, and maybe we can put, if we do figure there is a way to potentially phase, we'll put both of those scenarios into the rate study and then run the numbers and show you what it looks like. But we're there. It's really nice how everything's dovetailing in at the correct time. You know, we just did our last rate increase in July. Next July is when we need to do the next one. We've got plenty of time. This, again, dovetails very nicely.
That's good.
And time frame.
And those projections did go with the master plan that we did. And we looked with planning commission and things like that for densities and things like that.
That's good. Because it does all fit together. I mean, it's not, you know, at some point you get all the different minds. Obviously, you all are looking at this and then looking at other facilities and other communities. What are they doing? What have they done that makes good sense? And how we can learn from it rather than trying to recreate.
Actually, it's under construction right now. Bentonville's under construction right now. Bentonville just approved construction. So, and Springdale is also under construction right now. So everybody's plant is under construction. I guess I am too. We're a little bit behind.
Well, because people keep moving here.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the time spent on this, I know you put it consolidated into very few slides, but the team has done a fantastic job looking at every alternative. Competition, you know, we try to stay away from anything proprietary. Again, plan for expansion, go out and look at things. We don't, none of these guys take anything off face value. You don't see in motion and talk to the operators. And so what you see here looks very, there was a lot of work to get there.
Well, we've got one person in the room that's trying to keep from spending $46,000. It was 20, and then it was 20, and then it's like, well, I didn't want to pay 20, and then it was, so I just know from what I've seen, and I've only been here a short period of time, is that you all manage the dollars very well. Don't spend anything that you don't have to spend. So I have trust that y'all look at what you need to look at. And then again, when you look at we're at 75% capacity, it's like now right at that, you want to get that 90%, and we don't want to get behind it. So I'd rather stay way ahead and plan 20 years out.
Jared and I will work with the rate study consultant and get you some information on that as soon as we get. We're very close to coming
out. Well, the cost is going to do nothing but go up. So, I mean, we've got to get it. I mean, there's $15 million right there just for waiting.
I do want to point out that this, even with all of this, certainly the larger of the two phases, and it's critical to address the I&I, but there will be a second phase to, you know, expand these facilities. And we'll also be looking at that biological treatment as well, even though these improvements will address the hydraulic capacity. What we're going to lose is, as we see more and more flow, is the ability to shut down one of those biological treatment trains in order to do rehab maintenance work. And so, you know, we'll have three, and we'll need those three online. So at some point, we'll need to build four just to have a spare so we can take down the other ones and do maintenance, unless we can find a way around that. So I didn't want anybody to have the impression that we're going to do this project and we're good for the next 30 years. there will be another phase.
Yeah, I guess, you know, just from my own ignorance, it looks like it would be a difficult one to phase, which makes you have to bite off the whole.
Yeah.
I mean, makes it more likely that we will, but it's part of it.
Put the numbers together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you for your work.
Yeah, nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For all the work out here.
Okay.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
I second.
Second. All the aye.
Thank you.